Okay, so sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Did any of you ever hear that when you were a kid? I did too, and I remember thinking, because this is the kind of kid I was, well, it's literally true that words can't break my bones. But words can hurt. They can hurt. We know that. But words can also heal. And so we come to right speech. Right speech, the third step in the Eightfold Path and our focus for this month. So we've already had two talks on right speech. Nina reminded us that right speech begins with right intention. And for me, I would say that boils down to do no harm. Do no harm to others or to myself. And then Candace last week reminded us that right listening is an integral part of right speech, which means fully listening to someone and not having half of your mind thinking about what you're going to say when it's your turn. So, I have been trying to think about what my intention is before I speak. Is it to make points? Is it to show how smart I am? Is it to convince somebody else that they're wrong and I'm right? That one shows up a lot. Or is it maybe to comfort or to share information that could be useful or possibly an idea that I want feedback on? Or maybe it's to ask a question like, how are you doing? Or how can I help? I find that right intention is a challenge. Thinking about it is a challenge. I forget. And I also get confused sometimes because as a human being, I'm complicated. I have a lot of feelings and a lot of thoughts, and sometimes they contradict each other. And sometimes the best I can come up with is an approximation of right intention. And that made me think about something from my childhood. And interestingly enough, my sister just thought about this recently too. When we were kids, my sister and I shared a room, a bedroom, and in this room we had a desk, which we never used as a desk, and it had a big drawer, which was almost empty. And we turned that drawer into what we called the hate drawer. So whenever we had a fight with each other or quarreled with our parents, instead of screaming, I hate you, at each other, we went and we wrote it in the hate drawer. And it's interesting because years later, oh, well, also one thing I need to say, we also had this dog named Tootie, and we all adored Tootie. And one time my sister had come home from shopping for a Christmas, a birthday present for my mom, and it was a little glass vase, and Tootie jumped up on her and knocked the vase to the floor and broke it. And my sister actually went and wrote, I hate Tootie in the hate drawer. But mostly it was, I hate Judy, because they called me Judy then. I hate Jill. I hate mother. I hate daddy. And years later, when my parents were going through the room and turning it from a kid's room into a guest room after we'd moved out, they found the hate drawer. They never seen it before. And I remember my mom actually called us and said, okay, I get I hate Judy, I hate Jill, mother, daddy, but I hate Tootie. How could anybody hate Tootie? So Jill had to explain. But the interesting thing about that is that we had access to the hate drawer. We knew what we were writing about each other. And I can remember opening that drawer and seeing the latest I hate Judy and just going, ho hum, you know, no big deal. Because it's like on some level we knew We did not hate each other, and we did not hate our parents, and we certainly didn't hate the dog. But we had these feelings that we were too immature. We didn't have any tools to deal with them. So we put them in the drawer, and somehow they were diffused. It was better than screaming them at each other. And, you know, I look back on that now as our approximation of right intention. Interesting, huh? So now, of course, we do have tools to deal with our feelings. And so how do we align ourselves with right speech? Well, there are guidelines. So we can ask ourselves, is what I am about to say true? Is it timely? Is it useful? Is it kind? And as soon as I say that, I begin to think of examples. I begin to think, well, what if in this situation, in that situation, and how does this apply? Because I always want to take the Dharma and apply it. You know, I want to see how does this work in real life. And so I come up with these examples, some of them hypothetical, some of them actual examples. And I'll share some of them with you because at least I found them useful. And you might notice that all of these examples that I came up with are the difficult conversations, the conversations that we have to have sometimes. And how do we do that and still adhere to the guidelines? So I want to look first at useful, timely, and kind. I'm going to leave truth for last because I somehow find that one the most nuanced in a way, which is interesting. So, okay, in Philip Moffat's book, Dancing with Life, he has an example of a husband who wants a divorce. Now, this is something he does have to talk to his wife about, right? Going to be a difficult conversation. So he decides to talk to her about this just as she's going into labor with their child. Timely? Mm-mm. Not so much. Useful? Definitely not. Kind? No. But I have a friend who years and years ago, she was in a similar situation. She was in a bad marriage. She wanted a divorce, and she had just gotten her courage up to talk to her husband about it, and he was in a car wreck. And he hurt himself very badly. And I remember being in the hospital elevator with her and my ex-husband going up to see him, and she looked at us and she said, "This is probably not a great time to ask for a divorce, is it?" And we said, "Yeah, you might want to wait on that." And she did. She had more compassion and more wisdom, just intuitively, than Philip Moffat's guy. She did wait, and it was quite a long time before she got that divorce. She did eventually get it, but she got him through the injury. Okay, so what if you mess up? Like the husband did. Sometimes you can make amends. For example, okay, another hypothetical example. Say you have an employee who is just not cutting it, not doing well. You've got to talk to him about it. And so you're in a meeting with his team, and you're talking about a project, and you come to the part he was supposed to handle, and he blew it. And you just come unglued, and you say, "How could you do this again? You really screwed up again. You know, if you don't pull it together, you're out." And as soon as you say it, you realize, okay, this was not timely. This wasn't the right place to talk about this. So what do you do? Well, maybe you can ask him to stay after the meeting and say, "I'm sorry. that's not how I wanted to handle this. And maybe we could go, but we do need to talk about it. So let's go in my office and talk. Sometimes that works. Sometimes you can apologize. Sometimes you can make amends. What if you can't? Sometimes you can't. And I have an example from my adolescence. I had these two friends. We will call them Mary and Penny, not their names, but they were both from difficult families. They both had parents who were alcoholics. I did not like going to their houses. I didn't, Penny's in particular, because her mother and her stepfather would sit around at the kitchen table and get drunk every single night. And that stepfather, I don't know if he was abusive, but he scared me. I didn't like to go there. And they liked to come to my house because it was more normal house. So one night they were both there, and I think they were going to spend the night. And for some reason, Penny was out in the living room with my mom. And Mary and I got to talking, and we realized that Penny had been lying to us. She had been making stuff up. She had been making up things to impress us, things that she hadn't really done, and telling us different stories. And we were just livid. And we went out in the living room and we got her and we just dumped on her. Just really, really dumped on her. And I don't remember exactly how that all worked out. I mean, we did make up. I roomed with Penny in college for a while, but I do know that we never talked about that again after that night. Never. We never apologized for dumping on her. She never apologized for lying. You know, we never had that conversation where you sit down and say, okay, what's going on? You know? And it's that's one that I would like a do-over on. But it's too late. I have no idea where these people are anymore. And by the time, I mean, we just felt so self-righteous, you know. It was much later that it occurred to me, we were just mean. We were mean. And, you know, I guess there's not much I can do about that, except chalk it up to lesson learned, hopefully. And then there's another kind of speech that the Buddha's not too fond of that I had a lot of questions about, and that is what you'd call idle chatter. Okay? And last Tuesday, before Tim's meditation, some of us had signed on early, and we were just chatting. Okay? We weren't saying anything mean or, you know, We were talking about cats and making jokes, and all of a sudden one person said, "Is this idle chatter?" And we said, "Oh, idle chatter. Oh, idle chatter is bad, you know." And I got kind of self-conscious then. So after the meditation, I asked him about it. And he said, "What is your intention? Is it to connect? Because this is often how we connect, you know? And if that's your intention and you're not being mean or anything, maybe relax a little bit." And I thought, okay, yeah, the Buddha's all about the middle way, isn't he? I mean, we can get so lax that we just blurt out anything, but we can also get so rigid and uptight that we're afraid to even communicate. So, I found his answer very, very useful. But there is one form of idle chatter that probably we should just let go of, and that is gossip. Now, is there anybody here who has never descended into gossip in your life? If so, let me know how you did it. Because there is a great temptation in human beings to gossip about somebody who's not there. I don't know why. Maybe it just makes us feel powerful or superior or something, but it's definitely not timely, useful, or kind, and sometimes not even true. And how do you know if it's gossip? Okay, another example, and these are made up friends. Say I have two friends, we'll call them Alice and Betty. And we're all good friends, and then Betty leaves, and we kind of lose touch with her. She moves out of town. And then she comes back to visit, and I run into her. We're having tea, and of course she says, how is Alice? Okay, Alice is not there. We're going to talk about Alice, and she's not there. So I say, well, she's doing great. She just got a new job. She's really happy. And Betty says, oh, fantastic. I'll text her, and maybe I can get together with her too. Is that gossip? I wouldn't say so. I mean, I would say that's useful information. It's kind. It's, you know, it's not, it's true. Or say, what if she's not doing so well? What if I say, well, Alice is not too happy right now. She broke her leg. She's stuck at home. You know, some of us have been going over to bring her groceries and whatever. And so Betty says, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I will definitely call her tonight and I will go over and see what I can do for her. I would not call that gossip. Again, it's useful information. It's timely. It's kind, you know. But what if you say, well, I haven't seen her for a while, but guess what I heard? She's having an affair. She's cheating on her partner. And don't tell anybody because I promised I wouldn't tell, right? Is that gossip? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not timely, not useful, not kind, and maybe not even true. It's a rumor. So I think we know. I think we can feel the difference, right? Okay. So, truth. Is it true? Now, the Buddha says we're supposed to speak the truth even when it's not to our advantage or to someone else's advantage. And Philip Moffat says, if you can't speak the truth, just don't say anything. But there are times when you actually don't have the option to just not say anything, right? When you're asked a direct question. But I can see the part about, okay, if it's not to my advantage, still speak the truth. And I would even say that sometimes when I think it's going to be to, I think it would be to my advantage to not tell the truth, it wouldn't really, you know, it's a mistaken view of what is to my advantage. And okay, another example, when I was working, I was using my boss's test files. He'd given me permission to do that. And I accidentally ran payroll end of year on his test files. Now, you don't want to run payroll end of year unless it's the end of the year because it's irreversible and you just have to reload your files. And as soon as I saw it going, I thought, oh no, what have I done? And this little kid voice says in my head, maybe he won't notice. Maybe he won't know it was me. But first, fortunately, my grown-up voice said, don't go there. He trusts you. You have to be trustworthy. So I sent him an email. I said, I just ran payroll end of year by accident on your files. You can yell at me now. And so I got the email yelling at me. And then that was it. That was the end. And of course, if I had not been honest about it, he probably would have found out anyway. I mean, it would not have even been to my advantage. Not only would it not have been right speech, you know. Okay. So, but what if it's not a question of somebody's advantage? What if it's a question of someone else's well-being? Maybe even their lives. And I can think of examples. What if by lying, you could protect a woman who is hiding from an abusive husband? What if you could protect an innocent family who's hiding from the secret police? I would do that. I know I would. Because it seems to me it's for the greater good. I don't know. I don't know what the Buddha would say about that. He's not here to ask him. Okay, and then what if it's just a situation, not so extreme, but just a situation of not hurting somebody's feelings? Then what do you do? Okay, well, there's the classic example of, does this dress make me look fat? And I would say, it depends on the situation. Use a little discernment. Okay, say you got a friend. You're going to meet her and you're going to go to a party together. So you meet her and she says, does this dress make me look fat? And you're about to walk in the party and you think it does. But what are you going to accomplish by telling her yes? And you have to answer. It's a direct question. I think I would probably just say, oh, you look fine. Let's go. But what if you're out shopping and she calls you into the dressing room and says, does this dress make me look fat? That's different. She wants an answer. She wants an answer. You might be a little more tactful and say, well, it's not the most flattering thing, but, you know, I wouldn't buy it. So, sometimes I think we have to use discernment. You know, we have to evaluate a situation and remember, what is our intention? Our intention to do no harm, you know? And what about these other guidelines? Is it timely, useful, and kind? Yeah, so it gets complicated. And also, there is the reality that in this world, truth can sometimes be relative. I mean, you have five people at an event, and you ask for them to give an account of that event, you're likely to get five different accounts, and they may contradict each other, and yet each person is telling the truth as they see it. Yeah, I've had that happen. So sometimes it's just a case of telling the truth as we see it, because our viewpoints are different. And we do know the difference between telling the truth as we see it and outright lying. We know the difference. Right? Okay, so I read, somebody said, and I don't remember who this was, but they said, we are living in a post-truth society. Post-truth, imagine that. And okay, it's true. Politicians have always stretched the truth. Salespeople have always stretched the truth. But it's true. Now we have some public figures who just outright lie. No relationship to reality whatsoever and seem to get away with it. I even heard one several years ago talking about alternate facts. Alternate facts. It's also true that online you can find anything. Anything. And you'll find people who believe it. Even if it, again, has no relationship to reality. And when you say post-truth society, that makes it sound like, well, that's just the way it is, and that's the way it's going to be. But I disagree. First of all, we know nothing is permanent. Nothing is permanent. And I don't know. I know so many people who have a longing, not even just a longing, a determination. To evolve into a different kind of society. It seems like we are maybe at a crossroads in human consciousness. It's like things are so bad in so many ways that something has to give. And anyway, I would like to be part of the movement that is evolving toward a society in which truth is respected and kindness and compassion are valued. And I expect all of you would too, or you wouldn't be here. So how do we do our part? Well, write speech, is a big part of that. Before we speak, before we text or email or post on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, we ask ourselves, is this true? Is this timely? Is it useful? And is it kind? To the best that we are able, always to the best that we are able. Thank you. Okay, so now we have time for questions and comments, if anybody has any. How is everybody doing? Yes. Yes, Suze.
Such a nice talk and so down to earth, and I really appreciated it. And just a couple comments that I think a lot of us can identify with. There's no do-over when we've just really messed up. But I think that's where we go back to our intention of not doing the same thing again. And that's a really powerful gift to ourselves and to our whatever community that we're part of. And I think that there's sometimes those painful memories can be such good information, because you're in a situation and that painful memory comes up, and you know, I want to twist the reality and say, oh, I didn't do so bad or whatever, but the truth is something different. Mm-hmm. And so pausing, maybe just not even saying anything and just saying, I need some time here. But that painful memory can be a really helpful gift to us in kind of revising or rekindling our intentions to do no harm and to learn from our mistakes. So anyway, I really appreciated your examples, and I just wanted to add that little piece.
Thank you, Suze, and I totally agree. Just thinking about that one example and that poor girl, and you know, now knowing thinking about her home life and the stress that she was under and all of these things. Well, like I said, I can't do anything about that, but it does make me kinder now. It definitely does. Yeah. Big lessons. Nana.
Thank you very much for your talk, Judith, and very applicable in many ways, particularly thinking about the hate draw.
The hate draw, yes.
And as Suze just said a few moments ago, that there are no do-overs, you know, when words are misspoken. And so now in my awareness, to add to what you said about how to practice, right, so is it timely, is it truthful, etc. You know, I like to borrow a little bit from the Kabbalah, the term abracadabra, which means to speak into form. Therefore, casting spells, spelling, A, B, C, D. Therefore, whenever one speaks words, one is casting spells. Because that's how the blockchain of karma works. You can't delete it because it comes from an intention. I think you pointed to what Nina shared last week. Mm-hmm. So what kind of spells do I want to cast on myself in my self-talk? And the challenges I've had, what kind of spells were spoken to me? You're this, you're just like that. That became real. So how do I speak to my children? What kind of spells am I casting? What do I speak into the life that I'm living? What kind of spells am I casting?
Very interesting. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, Yeah, it's interesting, you know, thinking back to the sticks and stones thing, how that was supposed to make us somehow impervious to hateful speech. But it didn't. It didn't. And I don't know, it's just wishful thinking. I guess it was probably my parents that said that. I don't remember. It was just in the culture, like, okay, you know, toughen up. But we know better. Okay. Anyone else? Lillian.
As we've been kind of talking about right speech this month, something I've been trying to be aware of is just, I've been trying to be aware of just like when I'm speaking, which is, it feels kind of strange to actually just like try to pay attention to it. And I've kind of just been noticing how reflexive my speech is. And even when I'm trying to have this intention around just awareness of what am I saying and where is what I'm saying coming from, I've noticed there's such a large gap between like speaking and then realizing, oh, I was speaking. And like, it's oftentimes after the conversation is over and I'm realizing, oh, I was just like, there was this action, right? There was this action coming from an intention that wasn't coming from an intention, rather, right? It's probably that maybe it was coming from self-thing and maybe it's coming from all these other things. And there wasn't necessarily this great harm that came from it, but there was this lack of awareness, right? And I think as you were talking about like the idle chatter, right? Like, when you gave an example of, you know, talking about the cats and stuff like that, I think it's almost like do I even have awareness of the fact that I'm speaking, right? And am I even just doing harm by the fact of not having awareness and just, I guess, like, I think sometimes the term that I hear used is like heedlessness, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just been interesting trying to just have this awareness and trying to just, you know, slowly bring that gap between speaking and the awareness of speaking, trying to like slowly bring that down. And it's crazy how often now I'm noticing that, oh, like there is like an ouch and like having to feel that ouch and like how many times do you have to feel it to actually like have something change. But yeah, it's been interesting, kind of trying to work with this past month. I think like the examples you gave, but also just, they were really helpful in terms of, you know, just identifying some of the ways that this, you know, kind of like takes place just every day, right? Like we don't realize what we're doing and then we've done it, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's true. I mean, like I said, I often forget to even think about this when I'm about to speak, but sometimes it's while I'm speaking, oh, what am I saying? What am I doing this? You know, is there any point in what I'm saying and or afterwards? But it's all part of it, you know, it's all part of the process. It's all part of the learning. So, yeah. Elizabeth.
Thank you. It's really good to be here. And I want to say, first of all, that I have wholeheartedly taken in and found a yes in my heart for the things that people are saying here. And so there's a sense in which I agree with everything that people are saying. And I want to say that for me, I want to look at the words of right speech a minute. And that's to say, I've been sitting with the Sangha for months now, and I've been debating because people have talked about right intention, right speech, right action. And there's a part of, and how they like that, because that gets them in tune and allows them to find their way back to their alignment. And I love that. And at the same time, I'm aware that for me, how easily wanting right speech soon becomes wanting to be right. And for me, when I say I want to be right, I don't generally mean I want to be right like I want to be a know-it-all, because I have a list of don't do that's, and don't be an insufferable know-it-all is one of them, because I don't want people to go away. And but what I mean by that is very soon what I try to do to practice right speech becomes what I try to do to avoid suffering. As if I can just get it right and perfectly, then I can not only take care of this instance, but I can avoid suffering in the future. and maybe I cannot cause suffering, and maybe that way I'll be able to stay out of suffering. And then I become so bound up in that that I'm not in the moment anymore, and I'm trying to be perfect. And I'm also aware that I'm also in that moment not acknowledging the existence of suffering. And sometimes I'll try to say something as right speech, only to realize later I did the best I could, but I had ignorance, and it came out in ignorance. And sometimes I do it with the best of intentions, and it still causes harm because of how it lands or because of my ignorance. And I think one of the most important things for me, I, by the way, use the words wise speech, because I so much want to find a right or a wrong that I can use Buddhism to cling to. And so I need to not do that. I need to be in the gray middle path between those two, where I can allow my heart to be touched, and I can allow myself to make mistakes, and I can allow myself to feel the impermanence and keep learning and do things wrong and mess up and understand that I'm never off the path, even when I'm unintentionally or intentionally, because my ego gets involved causing harm. And so I love listening to everything that everyone is saying. For me, a piece of wise speech involves a huge amount of forgiveness for other people when they communicate, because everyone's trying to communicate something. And I, by the way, as a teenager, would have been the girl from the alcoholic home who would have told the lies to make herself look impressive, because just like you said, I had no idea what normal was, and I just wanted people to like me. And more than that, my self-esteem was so low, I said things that I thought would be impressive so people would maybe not think I was a fuck-up. So, and I can utterly forgive you for being impatient with that, because I had to learn not to do that. And I guess the last thing is, I just this last week had to set boundaries with someone. The fourth time she tried to help me go off my cancer medication, because a friend of hers did, and she thought it was a great thing. And it was a very difficult conversation. And I had to think about, I had so much trauma the first three times she said it, I couldn't say anything. And the last time I had to do it in writing. And then I thought about, what do I need here? And I realized for me, there was a lot of times when I would, in right speech, stay silent because I was so afraid of communicating it wrong, when really information would have been helpful. And one of the things that my husband does is he will let me know what he heard, not what I said, but what he heard. And like, here's what I heard you say. And I'm like, oh, wow, that isn't what I meant to say. Let me try again. And, you know, what I heard this dear woman say was, essentially, Elizabeth, I don't care if you die as long as I get to keep being helpful. And Elizabeth, boy, these side effects are really bothersome for you. Are you sure your life is worth it? And even natural is better. Why can't you cure yourself with your mind? And those, of course, were not what she was meaning to say. So I didn't blast her, and I didn't say any of those things, because I knew that was not what she was truly trying to say. But I had the conversation with her, and then she still canceled the next time we were going to get together. So, and right now she's taking time with her feelings, which is super healthy. And I'm really glad that I didn't say those things to her, because I knew they weren't what she meant, but they were still what I heard, because there was ignorance in what she was saying. And I've done that so many times to other people that, all I can say is, wow, I'm glad you're taking the time that you need. And as soon as I said it, I worried about the things that I said that I didn't say she was ignorant, but I did say she didn't know much about cancer treatment, and I could see that she was hurt. So, but and years ago, I would have reacted so differently. So I'm just I'm still sitting with it. But I'm thinking this was a clean communication. I give her information that she needed to have. And it was my trauma that made me not be able to just say the first time she said it, stop, this isn't helpful for me. So sometimes I think trying to find the words, even if they don't come out as right, is wise speech too. And so there's that. Thank you all.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of good points that you made there. And it is, a lot of people have a problem with right, and I've had a problem with the word right as well, because I keep thinking right and wrong, but it really is more like, I guess the way Tuareg explained it, more like aligned speech or harmonious, you know, in harmony with the Dharma speech. But I'd say if wise speech works better for you, and we often say wise speech, say wise speech. I've also heard the word skillful used, you know, instead of right. So I would just say don't get hung up on the word. There are other options, because you're right. You are correct that we all mess up, and we have to give ourselves permission to do that, because we are human and we will. And if we, you know, it's like becoming so rigid about idle chatter that we can hardly speak, you know, becoming so rigid about, oh, I'm not doing this right. I'm not meeting the guidelines, and my intention is wrong. And then, you know, we're learning as we go. And that's just the way it is. That's the way it is. So, yeah. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Julie.
Elizabeth, I just wanted to say thank you for sharing that. And it just made me think of a word that I just wanted to say out loud, which is metta. That's all.
Yes, and that's exactly what I think about when I think about my friend from high school, Metta. Yeah, but I didn't know about Metta then. All I knew was that I knew everything, right? And she was wrong and I was right, and so it was okay to dump on her. Wow. Charlotte, you had your hand up. Did you want to say something? No. Okay. Anybody else? Candace.
I too wanted to thank Elizabeth for that. And it is really hard to know when to jump in and say to somebody, please, what you're saying is not helpful to me. It happens so often. And lately, because I have somebody very dear to me who's going through something difficult, I am finding I have to be careful about what I say. And I've noticed this quirk where I'll say, how are you feeling? And then as they start describing, I start a commentary. Instead of listening to the whole thing. And it was really when I was, you know, reviewing Inside Dialogue last week for the talk that I thought I really have to go back to deep listening. And that is what I'm really focusing on right now. And it's still, you know, you still have to break out of that if someone is saying to you something that's really hurting you or silencing you. And that's what I really felt I was doing to this person, is silencing them, because they would sort of, you know. So it's tricky. It's very tricky. And it's a beautiful practice to really just say, listen. You know, just listen. Just wait until you know for sure it's finished. So thank you, Elizabeth. That was a really wonderful example of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And that being on the receiving end of somebody who is just really not being helpful. That's a whole other thing, like how to respond to that in a way, as you say, that's not, well, just shut up, you know. But that is also wise speech or right speech. How to not be defensive. That's a hard one. Yeah. Suze.
I know I already spoke, but I just wanted to respond to this thing about forgiveness, because when Billy died so suddenly, people said the most awful things to me from place in their hearts that they really wanted to say something useful and kind and helpful. Dozens of people told me I needed to get a dog. Other people were, you know, tell me about the dreams you have of him. And he was nowhere in my dreams. So I felt like I was being a failure at a grieving widow, you know. I mean, there were so many things. And my practice helped me realize that they just didn't know what they were doing. Just like I haven't always either. And I really hated hearing all of this stuff. But the practice really did help me go, oh, they just don't know how to respond to somebody whose husband just died. They just don't know. And that forgiveness didn't deny the pain, but it put it into a context that I could handle it and listen for the next thing, that next person telling me to get a dog. He finally came up with a right response, which was, if I were into dogs, that would be a good idea. So that was the way I handled that one. But anyway, I just love all of what people are talking about. Thank you.
Yeah, me too. And this compulsion to give advice. I see that in myself too. One thing my sister and I have, because we're very different. We're really close, but we're really different. And we both have this compulsion to try to make the other one be like us, you know. And we would get into we even still sometimes get into the most ridiculous arguments where, like, okay, if I just make this one point, she's going to be convinced, you know. And I don't know. I think the last time that I saw myself falling into that, all of a sudden I saw it. And I thought, this is stupid. This is ridiculous. I think maybe I don't even have to say anything. Yeah. And sometimes that's the best. Sometimes that's the best policy, I guess. I don't know. It's like I say, it's complicated. We're complicated. People are complicated. And yet, you know, it's all there. The teaching's all there. The Dharma's all there. It's there for us to use, and it works. We just have to plow through all the feelings and all the thoughts and all of the confusion and everything. But I think it does get better. It does get clearer. Yeah. Okay, anybody else? 5 minutes left. Julie.
Hi, I just wanted to say that something I learned from couples counseling that was really helpful with deep listening was when somebody's speaking to two things. One, to like say, tell me more, or is there more to see, you know, if they're finished. But tell me more was really useful. It shows some like excitement about what they're saying, and it almost always results in them sharing more. So they weren't done, and they appreciate you asking for more. And paraphrasing back, and that gives them a chance to say, oh no, that's not exactly what I was saying. And then you can go deeper in that way. And that was just so useful and so helpful. And so I just wanted to share that, because everybody sharing today really helped me remember those tools.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that is a good one. And that means that you have to be really listening to them and not just thinking about what you're going to say.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a challenge. Okay, Lillian again. Well, actually, it's not Lillian.
Yes, Sue, something, what you said kind of reminded me of something I've been thinking about a little bit recently in terms of what do we hear and what others say. And I think sometimes, and I think it also reminds me a little bit of Elizabeth, what you had shared, in the sense of sometimes we think that we have right speech and we are just like, it turns out we were kind of like far away from them. We actually did cross on with our words. And it feels like there's almost this dichotomy to me of, and maybe not dichotomy, but there's kind of like two sides to right speech of our ability to bring intention and try to have the right words to match that intention when we communicate, but also being able to hear what someone else's intention is and not get lost in necessarily the words that they use to convey it. Because I think it's so easy for the right thing for one person to hear, the right words for one person to hear may be entirely the wrong words for someone else to hear. And I think, like, Sue's, what you mentioned is like, it, I think like your example of how, you know, you ended up trying to just like hear what they were trying to say as opposed to what, you know, the words they were saying, right? I think that's something I'm trying to work with as well. Trying to like, see, like, you know, what is someone's intention? Or like, what is like, what are they trying to communicate? And maybe just the words don't come out right. And it feels like there can both be, while words can cause harm and we're doing our best to have right speech to avoid causing that harm, we can also not unnecessarily cause harm to ourselves by seeing someone's intention and trying to see what their intention was as opposed to necessarily the specific words that came out to try and say it. So yeah, that really just kind of reminded me of that a lot.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, everybody's comments have been so helpful and so insightful. I love it when you guys talk. I love it. So, well, I guess we have come pretty much to the end here, unless somebody has something really quick to say. Okay. Well, let's just take a minute and let us dedicate the merit of our practice to all the people who are suffering in this world, sending them a little bit of metta, a little bit of metta. All right, and dedicating the merit to all beings. All beings. Thank you.